Market Watch is proudly brought to you by TopSport, home of the TopSport betting multi. Gamble responsibly. Call 1800 858 858.
G'day everyone and welcome to the TopSport Market Watch podcast. My name's Jimmy Smith. I'm here with the usual suspects. Just at the moment, my lawyer's sifting through the remains of what was the last couple of podcast defamation proceedings. I would have thought we'd be proceeding very shortly. In the meantime, we will continue with this podcast. I'm talking about Tristan Merlihan, the number one seed from topsport.com.au and Jared Condon from readingtheplay.com.au. No sign of Brad Haddon. He claims he's working on the test match, but my suggestion is that he's very sheepish after the pillaging that he's given me over the last couple of weeks. How are you, gentlemen?
Very good, Jimmy. No, it was Brad was a very good to have someone singing to the same song sheet as what Jared and I normally do, just to heap pressure onto you. But I got to be honest, it's very good to have you back. It's a lot different sitting in here answering questions and trying to run the ship, and you do it very, very well. So very happy to have you back. I hope you had a great time in America. We had a great time covering this whilst you're away. And I think we came up with a couple of tips. I know Jared was trying to ring up customs and try to see if there was a way we could keep you in America for a while. But I don't know. Obviously, it wasn't successful, but he certainly came up with some good mail over the last couple of weeks.
Jimmy, I'm just not sure what angle that lawyer of yours thinks he's going to have to stand on, given that we're about $1,000 in the plus since you've been away. But anyway, it's all for a good cause, and hopefully we can flick the tips through this week and maybe put you on mute when they go out. You might pick them up on Monday. But the other thing that was very noticeable while you're away, Jimmy, was all of a sudden you seem to have got those telco issues fixed. I mean, you know, Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and social media has been flooded with all of these pics. I mean, you were, you know, like an envelope, mate. You got an opening to anything. I mean, here you are sitting at an NFL game and then at Staples Center watching a basketball game and then waltzing around Disneyland. I mean, dear, oh, dear. I mean, SEN's paying you way too much.
Incredible networks over there, the 5G networks. Yeah, so it was excellent that that phone was able to be used. I'll tell you what I couldn't do. Couldn't open the TopSport app when I was over there, which is not available in this region, which was a little bit disappointing given the fact you guys were tipping winners left, right and centre. And just before I tell you about my time over in the US, what about Haddon yesterday, who sends around the text message when Australia lost the toss, England win the toss and elect to bat, and he said, wicket first over. And I'm like, oh, righto, you know, frame the market. Come on, here we go. And of course, first ball, Mitch Stark knocks over Rory Burns. Thank heavens we didn't have to watch him bat for too much longer. But hadn't picking winners even outside the podcast.
Too good. He could have been a little bit more specific though. Geez, like he had six balls to pinpoint it down. But no, very, very sharp. As soon as he sent that information out, it was the ball was swinging, it was hooping, and Mitch Stark obviously used it to his advantage. I think Warney still reckons it was gun barrel straight though, that delivery, didn't he? So that was
I think that's the best part of the day was Ricky Ponting's commentary was, yeah, what a lovely ball, and look at the in swing, whack, hits the leg stump, and Warney's clearly has had a bit of an issue with Mitchell Stark over recent years, goes, oh yes, and a straight ball and he's left it and has hit his leg stump. So do with that what you wish between those two commentators, but Ricky Ponting's just an absolute class, isn't he?
Yeah, what did Warney say? Yeah, it's probably the worst ball of the first over. Well, that's the one that cannoned into leg stump. But anyway, if you want to listen to this, make sure you're downloading Spotify, Wooshka, Apple, subscribe to the podcast as well. Dancing in the Streets of Detroit as of last week too. We'll get to that very shortly. But you better tell us, give us an update, Jared, about where we're at with our tips from last week or your tips from last week and what's happening re-pass it on clothing.
Well, Jimmy, if they've been listening over the last 3 weeks while you've been away, they've been backing trucks up and collecting money anywhere and everywhere. Last week, we went from 2 from 3. We also gave out the winner to the Pakenham Cup at $3.30, which was Smoke and Romans. only won by four lengths and kicked their heads in. Our bet, which was race four, number one, Marine One, absolutely did the same. We gave it out here last week at $4.20 and all of a sudden got bet into almost even money. But a nice collect there, and we got one from two with the NFL. But, oh, yes, the highlight of the weekend. What about the Detroit Lions? Last play of the game. Now, I don't know if you guys happen to see some social media of Jared Goff's girlfriend who was doing a bikini swimsuit photo shoot for Sports Illustrated, who obviously have a very famous swimsuit calendar each year or edition. And there she was on the beach, and the message comes through to Jared, last play of the game, has come up with a touchdown. The Lions have won. Now, it was probably a very good reason why she was doing the swimsuit shoot. And all of a sudden it was there, lo and behold, bouncing around, jumping around, celebrating the win. Probably just as much as Tristan was. The Lions, 364 days, come up with a final last play win.
Oh, it was a lot of relief after they blew a big lead at halftime as well. That was, I thought, here we go again. And I'm just now trying to work out where, you know, trying to get a bit of leave sorted for getting some Super Bowl tickets for 2023, because I think the Lions are going to start a bit of a run here and get their dynasty kicked into gear.
You just wonder whether Jared's girlfriend lives in Detroit. very different weather compared to Los Angeles, where he was previously.
So. Well, by the looks of things, Jimmy, she certainly doesn't shop in Detroit.
No, that's right. Motor vehicles only.
Jimmy, you went and saw the Steelers Chargers. That must have been an absolute highlight in that new stadium.
Second NFL game that I've ever been to in my life, 16 years between the first and the second. Previously went to a Giants v. Washington game at Giants Stadium back in 2005. So going over there, I thought, you know, I've got to go to this new stadium. I've seen it and marvelled at it. So checked out the schedule that was there. I've got a brother-in-law that's a massive Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So Chargers v. the Steelers, Justin Herbert. I went, yeah, you know what, I'll go to this game for sure. Took my young bloke, Austin, who is absolutely sports mad. We're in the nosebleed seats, but it didn't matter. One thing I found really interesting, and it may be just SoFi Stadium, but one of the bugbears I get when I go to the Sydney Cricket Ground is that I actually get better information sitting at home on my couch than I do as a paying spectator at the cricket, which I think is completely wrong. You know, you should look after those customers that come into your ground. No problem at SoFi Stadium. Everything that you could want, any sort of data, analytics, replays, anything coming out of any play on the field, and I know the game lends itself to it, but all that displayed on the big screen, which was literally felt like it was right in front of you, given the size of it and the magnitude right in front of you. The other incredible thing was that at a Chargers home game, and I know they're probably a San Diego side more than an LA side, but it was literally 70 to 75% Steelers fan. And as someone mentioned on their way as we were walking out, you know, a Chargers fan who wasn't so happy, wanted to give a bit of stick to the Steelers fans. They said, enjoy your trip home, which will take about three blocks. But yeah, that was amazing. Black and yellow everywhere. And the
terrible towels.
Yeah. The terrible towels going on all over the place. I thought it was interesting. Ben Roethlisberger, clearly very, very talented, Hall of Famer and all that sort of stuff, but he is the least athletic athlete I think I've ever seen in high-level American sport.
Well, and they gave you one as a treat, Jimmy, a 78-point game. I mean, the Steelers, who just can't buy a point from week to week, all of a sudden come from a 14 points down to do a backdoor cover. I mean, it was just an amazing game to watch, with just points everywhere and bang.
Justin Herbert played superbly. We're walking into the stadium, and you know what I'm like, boys, don't mind a chat. And there's an older couple that were walking across the street with Austin and I, and I said, oh, g'day, mate, how are you? And he goes, oh, g'day, how are you? You know, he said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Australia. And he said, yeah, I thought, you know. I said, where are you from? And he said, I'm from Oregon. I said, oh, okay. And he said, yeah, I'm from Justin Herbert's hometown. I hope he plays well today. And sure enough, he played superbly. He even rushed for 100 yards in that game. And I literally saw them on the way out and I said, your guy played well today. So, yeah, they're very happy about that. No, it was awesome experience. Great bonding experience with my eldest bloke. So that was awesome. I think the better one was when Tristan reached out to me and said, "Hey, Jimmy, we'd love to send you to a sports event because of all the work you've done," which I'm forever grateful for, Tristan. So next thing I said, "Oh, well, I'll just go with Austin and maybe a brother-in-law." And by the time we finished, there's seven of us going to the Staples Center to watch the Lakers against the Detroit Pistons. The kids have had a COVID test before we went in because they were unvaccinated. But that was my first time at Staples Center. Now crypto.com, 20,000 people there, sold out, celebrities all around the floor. And for me, the thing is, having called some NBL and watched a bit of NBL, never watched the NBA game live, these guys are physical freaks. They are they make the basketball court look so small. And LeBron James at 6'10" is just an imposing athlete. But the thing that got me with LeBron, and he's mesmerizing too, because you end up watching him. But, you got superstars like Russell Westbrook and Carmelo Anthony that are on the floor with him, but he just commands so much attention. Is his level of skill. Like, here's a guy 6'10" who has the softest touch and just clever passing. And it was amazing. So on behalf of the Smith family, a big thank you to Tristan and Top Sport for allowing us to do that. And again, a great bonding experience with the family.
We're very very happy to see the family there. Like, I've got a couple of kids as well, and I know how much they love getting to these things on you when you're over there. Getting the opportunity to see LeBron, it might not come around again, and although that would be such a great thing to be chatting about years to come with the family. So we're very happy with everything both of you guys have done, and I just wanted to reach out and say thanks for what's been a great year with all of the work we've done collectively.
Well, the other good thing too, Tristan, is with Jimmy being away, I mean, you've probably picked up $10,000 in winning bets that weren't placed. So, I mean, it was a bit straightforward, wasn't it?
Well, it was some, well, you swung from the rafters. You hit a couple of very very good selections, Jared. So we're I'm thinking we're going to try to spin something up this weekend, and then what we're going to do is we're going to get the money paid to Pass It On Clothing after this weekend, so we can give the Christmas appeal a little bit of a kick along, and hopefully we can reach the target there that Chris and the boys are working towards.
Now, Jimmy, I know that we're about to talk about the test, so I just want to tee off a little early here. I have said over recent weeks that I thought that there just looked a bit of a gap in that market, and I couldn't believe that in a two-leg race that England would have been 440. Well, lo and behold, they just kept blowing like a gale. What I just... absolutely stunned me over the last 2 days leading into the test yesterday that England come out here unprepared with no first-class cricket over recent weeks. And, they've had a couple of years to prepare their schedule for this, but then leave out their two best long-term bowlers. Yes, they have a little bit of age around Anderson and Broad, but both of them, all suggestions are fit and could have played. I just can't believe the negative leadership. I mean, yes, it's a 5-test series, but surely in any team sport where you've got a 5-game series to decide a contest, you play from the front and you play with your best. I'm absolutely staggered that they end up, they announced 2 days out that they're leaving Anderson out, then the morning, an hour before the test starts, they name that Broad's out. And yes, it was probably the right toss to lose. Australia bowled very well, caught everything that went their way, and England completely crumbled. But I can't believe the impact of leaving those two guys out. I mean, I think Broad's got Warner, 12 times in their recent matches? So there's no Broad rolling in this morning, the matchup with Warner. To me, it's just absolute negativity right from the very day one of the opening of the test. I mean, England now just almost look lambs to the slaughter for the series, purely their mental approach, let alone what they're doing on the park.
Well, everyone talks, don't they, Tristan? I mean, we've had Hads on these podcasts, the Keeping Watch podcasts, and he talks about how important it is to start well. Australia didn't have a first test at the Gabba last year, but they did have that first test at Adelaide. They did start well. It didn't finish well, obviously, against India, but the record against England in Brisbane is phenomenal. And you're right, Jared. Like, if they only play two test matches, Broad and Anderson, then the Gabba and Adelaide are the two test matches. The fact that they're back-to-back in the schedule, so be it. You know, get them through that and get them because that's when you're going to get best use out of them. The conditions suit them as the way they bowl. They're world-class players. Otherwise, what are they doing here? It's a really, really strange one. I thought all bowlers bowled well for Australia, but Hazelwood and Cummins are amazing. I still am gobsmacked, Tristan, and you know you love your cricket. You played a lot of it. Every time I've played in a game of cricket, the big fast bowler gets the new ball, right? And now I know Stark gets a wicket with his first ball, but Pat Cummins is recognised as the best test bowler on the planet, but he bowls first change for Australia. I just wonder, Dennis Lilly saying to Rodney Hogg, no, okay, Rodney, you bowl the first over, that's fine. You know, Glenn McGrath saying to Paul Rifle, yeah, no worries, you bowl the first. It's just a really strange situation, complicated now by the fact that Pat Cummins is captain of the country. So I think that's extraordinary.
Yeah, and as we know, he got a wicket first ball, but I agree with you. Like, Pat Cummins is our marquee man, and now he's the captain. It's sort of a difficult situation, but I suppose Stark is most dangerous with that swinging ball. So I don't mind the fact giving him a couple of overs and then bringing Cummins in. But yeah, you're right. It changes things up. And just to touch on those points that Jared made, like, yeah, it's the reality is they batted and they got bowled out for 140-odd. And whether you pick Anderson or Broad, it doesn't make a difference in that sense. But it's the mentality, which is the thing that I'm finding strange from an English side of things. When you see them in the short form cricket, they're the most they're confident, bordering on arrogant, and it served them really, really well. I know they didn't quite get to the final in the T20, but they've been the flagship team in that short format. And you get to a series here where the brave decision would have been to bowl in that option yesterday. I know it's very difficult and it's very easy in hindsight, but if you're coming into a series as the big underdogs, you've got conditions overhead which are conducive to your team. Not only do you pick the safe option and bat, which I think most captains probably would have done, but then they leave out the two biggest exponents of those conditions and they leave them sitting on the bench to hopefully get through to Adelaide at nil all or 1-0 up and then to use them. It's praying and it's hoping rather than taking the game by the scruff of the neck. And from the Aussie perspective, it didn't work for them.
Well, the other thing was they then left themselves all but with no choice but to bat, having left those two guys out. If they, in winning the toss and those two guys being in the team, surely you would have given consideration to bowling first, given the conditions. Now, I know the obvious is that you bat first in test cricket, but the last four tests decided at the Gabba, the team that's batted first has lost. Well, this will be five in a row because Australia will wipe the floor here now over the next couple of days. Secondly, in leaving those guys out in a five-game series, and as you say, Jimmy, the first two tests would have been the right two tests to play those two bowlers. They could well have been in a position to at least been a couple of draws, possibly a win, going into the third test and being half a chance into the back end of the series. I mean, right now they're staring right down the barrel of a demoralising loss that could then potentially lead to a 4 or 5-0 series and limping all the way home. I mean, the English media should be ripping them apart.
Josh Butler top scores for 39. So we're doing this on the morning of the Thursday, day two of the test match. England all out 147, Cummins with 5 wickets as well. So how that plays out, I'm looking at the Top Sport website. Why can I not find a price, Tristan? I want to have a look at high bat for Australia.
I think that's the Jimmy Smith US block still applying, mate.
Once the game goes in play, we do have to switch it to a live market, but it should be like in between innings. I'll have to have a chat to the boys because we should have that market up. But yeah, it will be Steve Smith will be the favourite. He'll be around about that $3 mark. Labuschagne, $3.50. Warner Harris, sort of the next one. It's going to be interesting looking at the conditions. I really like Marcus Head. He was at the $7.50 price just because I thought there might have been a little bit of movement. But looking at the weather around here at the moment, certainly on the Gold Coast, the clouds aren't there. So it could be a really good spot for the Aussies to be batting right at the moment. If they had been having to bat in that last session last night, I think it would have been a bit dangerous.
Sorry, who are you looking at, mate? High bet. Who was $7?
I was looking at Travis Head yesterday at $7.50, just because I thought there was an opportunity of the new ball causing a bit of carnage when those conditions were overhead. But looking at the conditions now, I don't necessarily think it's going to be as big a drama as what I was looking at yesterday.
Well, once that big storm blew through last night, there's been no rain since. Absolute beautiful, sunny, hot conditions here this morning. Play will start on time. I mean, it looks a beautiful, sunny day. You know, Australia's going to get the best of that pitch and bat into day two and day three. And, I mean, there's possibility of some late storms given the weather forecast that we have. But, you know, Australia's now going to get the best benefit of that pitch.
Do it responsibly, but I don't think you can put too much on Stephen Smith to be high bat. It's just all set up for him, isn't it? Better conditions. Leadership position now. Still criticised. This blows me away. But he still gets criticised for being, I won't say he was hung out to dry by Cricket Australia, but I'm not far short of that. I'm all over him at the $3.
I thought the other thing that was very interesting to watch yesterday on that point too, Jimmy, was his leadership clearly as vice-captain. But, you know, he was playing at second slip, and I just thought his body language, his talk around the team, yeah, the leadership is there. And I think that it's great to see him back as vice-captain. I think it's outstanding that Cummings is the man. I think the way Cummings handled himself over the last couple of days leading into the test, and then the modesty of the morning, the fact that he gives Stark the new ball, but two overs later then chimes in. You know, I think it's a great little leadership position that Australia have, and very good for our test cricket moving forward.
All right, so we'll look at that topsport.com.au market for that one. BBL is in earnest, on in earnest. I'll tell you what, we had a doubleheader last night, and we're going to get a doubleheader on Boxing Day, and it seems a little bit wall-to-wall cricket. I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on it. Certainly the games that I've watched coming through the television, there is zero atmosphere. And I think they got a magnificent broadcast deal, right, which may have been altered subsequently by Channel 7. You know, Fox Sports has wall-to-wall cricket, and they obviously love it to reduce that churn from subscribers coming out of the AFL and the NRL season. But, gee, I think you need to be careful about cooking the golden goose, and I just get the sense that Cricket Australia might have done that. And I know there's all these different reasons, guys, about why people aren't getting back to live events, and there's a hesitancy associated with that for obvious reasons. But some of the crowds that we've seen in the first couple of Big Bash games have been really, really disappointing. It might change in school holiday period. I'm presuming that it will. But, gee, I think it's something Cricket Australia need to look at.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And I was at, as we know, I was at that first day yesterday of the test match, and the atmosphere, well, I was going to say it was electric when I walked in. The amount of people, the only thing which probably being an Aussie fan was good in hindsight was the English were a little bit quiet because of the way the game fell out. But you see that atmosphere, and then you look at the TV. I've hardly watched a game of the Big Bash, and I'm a big cricket fan. And I think it's been trending towards this direction for a while.
Yep.
And the season is longer and longer, and the star power is lesser and lesser. And people were saying, you know, the T20 was going to overrun the test cricket. We've seen when the Ashes, when the number one team or the number one rivalry in test cricket comes back to our shores, there's no correlation. No, you know, it is the focus. And the Big Bash is starting to worry me in terms of how, like the turnover. The turnover on the WBBL is very similar to the Big Bash at the moment, which is a worry from that side of it, and no disrespect to the WBBL. So I'm not sure how we fix it. As you say, the crowds are diminishing. It may increase once the school holidays come around, but there's got to be some tweaks because I think there were some negative tweaks, and it won't take much to bring it back, but you need some superstars. You need people looking at it, because what we're doing is we're directly competing with the IPL, rolling into the T20 World Cup, rolling into the Big Bash, and it is by far and away the third of those three tournaments, and people have seen a lot of cricket over the last little bit. So
I think you can put a fork in it and turn it over. It's just completely cooked now. I mean, the changes they've made over the last 3 years, I think, have just completely ruined what was an absolute winning schedule. Why in the hell would you on day one of a test cricket to open an Ashes series then have a doubleheader that night? I mean, that's just absolutely brainless. And if we go back 4 or 5 years ago, there was nothing better than the start of the school holidays to coincide with the start of the BBL season and kick back with your kids at 6 o'clock each night, have a bit of a barbecue, watch the game. It was all over within an hour and a half or thereabouts. And the TV ratings were outstanding. You know, the following of the game was outstanding. Then they've crammed and broadened the schedule with more and more games. Also, all of these really dumb doubleheader schedules, in my opinion. I think it's just completely turned off, not only the television audience, but clearly the in-house audience, Jimmy. And last night was just so typical of some really poor decision-making. I have had very little interest in the last couple of years. If I go back 4 or 5 years ago, I absolutely loved it through the Christmas holidays. And I would kick back with my kids and watch it each night, or friends or alike. I mean, I tell you, I probably watched 2 or 3 games last season.
Here we go. Scarcity is an economic concept, right? And if we have a look at the NFL, which we'll get to very shortly, I won't say they did it kicking and screaming, but the move from 16 to 17 games, you know, what do we look at that as a percentage increase? 6.6 or whatever, you know. Since the first BBL season, there were 28 matches. Then there were 32. Now there's 56. You know, they're just, they're, as we said, they've cooked the goose, and it's just, and double headers on you know, three games of cricket to watch in one day, you're asking too much of people. And I think they just need to be really careful. As for the cricket itself, Sixers, Thunder, Scorchers, almost the usual suspects are going to be really, really strong again. I totally agree about the lack of star power that we get. It's great that we see these young guys come through and they get an opportunity at that level. But, you know, that's no Chris Gales and no AB de Villiers and the equivalent. It's just not quite working for me at the moment. It'd be really interesting to see live crowds when school holidays is in play, and also what the TV numbers are going to be like. Thoughts on the competition itself, Tristan, around markets for winners looking for the Sixers to go back to back to back?
Yeah, and we've got the game tonight where the Strikers are taking on the Renegades. It's 172, the Strikers, $2.16, the Renegades. These two sides faced off only a couple of days ago. So it's an interesting concept having the teams back up and play each other again in such a short season. But looking at the outright betting, we see the Sixers at $3.75, the Scorchers $5, the Hurricanes $6, and the Thunder at $6 with the Stars at $8. So six is very short to go back to back to back.
All right, we'll keep our eye on that. We'll refer to it quite obviously during the course of the summer series on Top Sport Market Watch. Let's have a quick look at the NRL before we get to the NFL and some racing tips, boys. Brandon Smith, apparently he did a podcast, did he, when I was away? I didn't catch up with that one. But we're getting some players that I see where Gutho didn't want to go anywhere, but took 3 months to work out that he didn't want to go anywhere. So he stayed at the Parramatta Eels. My information is that Junior Paulo will stay. Despite the fact that he's been courted by Redcliffe, he would be a good signing for Redcliffe. Josh Hodgson to the Eels, I think is an obvious one. I think he's a high quality player. And Luke Thompson, there's all the speculation around about, it's a third party from the Bulldogs that are shopping him around. Well, I don't know whether the third party where he's getting his information, his or her information from, but definitely for sale. And I think obviously not necessarily the issue for next year, but 23 is when they've got Kikau, et cetera, coming to the club. Nick Kotrick's another one that'll be out the door shortly.
Well, Jimmy, Brandon Smith, I believe, is an ambassador for that podcast. And surely his role was probably the height and the awareness of it. Well, he did it all in one bang, didn't he? He didn't need any more than one episode to get it back on the front and the back pages. I'm not convinced that he's going to be at the Storm next year. I know the Storm hosed it down and then had a few articles written a particular way last weekend. I can tell you that from Wednesday onwards last week, they were touching up other clubs to try and do a swap loan deal that they have Brandon Smith not return to training this week. Now, they weren't able to get that deal done because they weren't able to secure a player that they thought was going to be what they needed as either an edge forward or a middle forward, whichever way they wanted to try and move things around. The other problem that the Storm clearly have is that Kamikamika is on some charges now. He may well not be on their books next season. We'll see how that plays out in the courts. Big Nelson may well not be playing any games, if not all of their games next season, because of his issue and not wanting to have the vaccination. So if Brandon Smith is then on the outer, that then leaves them very short in the middle. So a bit to play out there, and I think that's why Luke Thompson's name keeps getting mentioned. But sure as eggs, I'm be happy to bet that I don't think Brandon Smith plays game one for the Storm next year. You're right about some of those other changes. I think Hodgson is probably a very good get for the Eels, but he will be 31. You would have thought that the Eels would have wanted to meet the market and retain Reid Mahoney, who would have had 5-6 years in front of him. But they weren't prepared to do that, or the terms of 4 year, which the Bulldogs were very bullish about. But I would suggest over the coming weeks, we're still going to see, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 players moving, being released, moving around different clubs. There's lots and lots of off-seat changes still to come.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very interesting interesting situation. And we touched on it last week, Jared. I'll be interested in your thoughts, Jimmy. But if there's a side that's that will handle the adversity that the Storm are under now, it's Melbourne. They just do things so well in this position. They find a way. They're not panicking. They're not knee-jerk reaction. Yeah, they'll be livid about how this situation's played out, but they haven't just thrown the baby out with the bathwater. They're not going to make a decision on Smith until they get an option that works for them. So, and just even the fact we touched on with Christian Welsh re-signing with the Storm, like that's the player you want to continue to have around your club. And they just do those little things so well. I've got some dramas to work through over the next little bit, but I reckon Craig Bellamy will be taking it as a bit of a challenge, because I think people are already starting to write him off for next year, but I know they'll still have a couple of little tricks up their sleeve.
For my information, there's a vaccination coming out, and you might know more about this than I, Jared, that's protein-based, and that would ensure that Nelson Asfaw-Solomona would be able to take that vaccination. And that's coming early January. So that's a really watch this space. I know it's obviously have implications around, and it doesn't have the issues around with those people who have heart disease and or clotting issues. So that's the information that I get, that they see that as the way forward for Nelson, because obviously he's a very important part of, highly paid part of what they do. And the Tui Kamikamika thing is having an impact on Brandon Smith, whether he stays or goes, or whether there's an interest in Luke Thompson as well. Let's get into the NFL, boys. We've got another big weekend coming up. But first of all, Jared, you wanted to have a look at the playoff picture as it looks now across the AFC and the NFC.
Well, Jimmy, I just thought that this was the right place to start the discussion this week, because we're now 13 weeks down. We've got a 17-week season. Then we start into the playoffs. And as we've touched on over the last 6 or so weeks, it's an incredibly open competition, but again, dominated by the NFC. Now, I think that's where the winner comes from. I nominated them 3 or 4 weeks ago, still very keen about the Packers. I think that the Green Bay Packers will get through the coming weeks with getting key players back. You know, Rodgers is just such a sharp, smart operator as a quarterback. I mean, we all know about that, but a very, very clever coach into his third season, who just has such a strong winning record. But you know, they've played 5 games at home. Not only have they won all 5, they've covered the line on each of those 5 occasions. I think that they're going to end up probably as the number one seed. I think they can knock Cardinals off. I think the two sides that come from the NFC are the Packers and the Buccaneers. On the AFC, well, you know, the Patriots keep winning. I mean, we're yet to see whether they've actually beaten anybody. They keep getting teams that have got key players out or conditions to suit, like we saw last Tuesday in that huge snowstorm, weather storm, and I think they passed the ball once in the game. I think the Chiefs probably make a late run and move up the seedings there. So the two teams that come from that side probably look like the Patriots or the Chiefs, possibly the Titans. The key about the Titans is, as I touched on last week, they've had the highest injury toll of any team in the competition so far. They're waiting for Henry to get back in the finals. They've got a few other key guys to come back into the coming weeks. I think the Titans can probably straighten themselves up and make a little bit of a charge there. I still think that the play for me is the Packers. Still, I think, a very good price. $8, it's still a very open market. We've got the Buccaneers at $6, the Chiefs at $7.50, the Packers at $8, the Patriots at $8, the Cardinals at $8.50. I can't see that anyone in the AFC is going to end up winning the Super Bowl. So certainly I'm still all in on the Packers. A couple of highlight games this weekend. I mean, Buffalo play Tampa. Very interesting matchup. Buffalo in a lot of trouble coming out of that loss last week into a road trip, and more so into Tampa Bay, where Brady just has this amazing record against the Bills. They've played 35 times and he's won 32 of them. That's one hell of a hold. The other interesting one of the weekend is the Ravens go to Cleveland to play the Browns. Now, these two matched up only 3 weeks ago. The Cleveland have had the bye in between, getting a couple of players back. The Ravens are limping with some key injuries at the moment. I thought the two betting plays for the weekend, Washington been winning. I think they won their last five, but they now match up against the Dallas Cowboys, who I think have just got the right attack game and are able to throw the ball and really carve this up. So I thought that Dallas -4 at $1.85 was the first play for the weekend. And then let's wait till Tuesday afternoon. Jimmy loves this, sitting back in the studio, trying to do some radio. Well, I think you're back on breakfast next week, Jimmy, so you can kick back at lunch and watch this one. But the Rams against the Cardinals, a matchup earlier in the season, there was a lot of points in this, but I think defensively both teams have been far stronger and more organised through recent weeks. And I thought the total points of 52 looked way, way too high. For me, it was under 45. So let's go under 52, which is the market top sport at $1.82. So Dallas to cover the line at -4.5, and then under in the Rams and Cardinals game.
Yeah, no, I'm interested to see what the line you guys think will be for the coming weeks as to the discussion points of Brady v. Belichick in the Super Bowl, because they're getting to be both live chances now, and I'm sure there's going to be plenty of talk about that over the next little bit. As you say, they've had a few conditions to suit the Patriots. The Packers certainly look good, but Brady keeps doing it for Tampa. It's going to be an exciting run into the finals. But just looking at a couple of the other key games for the weekend, there's obviously, the main game of the weekend sees Detroit against Denver, where it's 4-10 Detroit, 125 Denver, and the flat line of 8. So whether they can go back to back, I'm not quite sure. But the Cardinals Rams is going to really sort of see where both of those teams sit. 209 head to head, the Rams, 176 Arizona, and the Lions 2.5. But yeah, getting into some good games of footy.
Can I just philosophically talk about going the unders on a total match score and how you're actually cheering against touchdowns? But yeah. It's like in the footy when you're saying, I don't want tries to be scored. You know, it's counterintuitive. But anyway, hey, a win's a win, right?
Jimmy, there's only one thing I ever try and cheer, and that's my wallet. So I'm happy for points under if that means that we're on the winning side of the result. Now, the other big news that's broken overnight out of the US is that Russell Wilson, the quarterback for the Seahawks, is now there's some leaks coming out that he's happy to do his waiver clause out of his contract and nominate three teams that he's happy to be traded to. So those three teams are the Broncos, the Giants, which is very surprising, and the New Orleans Saints. Now, the Broncos would probably be highly favoured there. I think they were mentioned earlier in the season as an option for him. So that's another key watch. Russell Wilson will be very highly sought after by both the Seahawks to retain, if not for another team to get hold of.
The interesting thing around that, and you talk about the Giants, so New Orleans and Broncos, you know, he's obviously going to be a key piece of what they can do going forward. So too for the Giants. But when you go to the Giants, you're going into a massive market like New York. You know, there we were at Staples Center watching LeBron James, who got out of Cleveland. I know he'd been in Miami previously, but he goes to LA because it's such a big market and he's thinking what's happening post his basketball career. I think Russell Wilson is such a strong brand and it's a pretty relatively small part of the USA up there in Seattle. So if he starts thinking about, well, where can I actually start thinking about my post-football life? And he's hugely entrepreneurial and has been highly paid for a long time. He's a you know, one of these elite athletes that's got pretty much a squeaky clean image. And if he wants to extend that into New York, then you're talking about a much bigger market than Seattle.
And not just that, like when LeBron went to the Lakers, there weren't a lot of other pieces of the puzzle there, but they came. That might be something in New York as well. And I know there was a stat there last week. I think it was the first time or the third time in 2 or 3 years where both of the New York sides have won on the same weekend. So if Russell can get to New York and he can bring a couple of pieces with him and maybe turn the side, not into maybe Super Bowl contenders, but into playoff contenders, it will only enhance his reputation as well. So there might be a different challenge there, as well as you say, the post-career stuff too. So it's an interesting one. It's a very interesting discussion piece. I know there's going to be a lot of chat over the next bit about where he goes.
Billiards Day, gentlemen, on Saturday at Randwick. What are we looking at here, Jared?
Well, Jimmy, it's a time-honoured race day. Villiers, always a very good Group 3 race. Held up very well this year. It's a very good field. I thought Gerald Ryan, race 8, the Villiers, held the key to it. He's got the two opening favourites in Ellsberg and Steely. I'm very much with number 15, Steely. $4.80 with Top Sport. Gets a very nice draw, has strong winning recent form, and I thought got in very well at the weights and can handle a wet track if we get a little bit of that forecast rain. But I thought the better today was the last. Jimmy, we might need a little bit of your influence here for a Jimmy Smith top fluck option, because I think the price has been knocked off this morning. But race 10, number 5, Brookspear, was 290 this morning, but it looks like a couple of people have backed that truck up. I thought it was a very good run first up on a heavy track. Was four wide, went drawn wide. Nashville Willer was very patient, finished very strongly for a second, gets a nice draw. Looks like plenty of speed, sits behind that. I thought it looked the anchor bet for the day. So that's race 10, number 5, Brookspear.
Well, look, I don't want you to cast any aspersions here on our good friend Tristan Merlihan from Top Sport, but what are you suggesting, Jared, that when you send your chip through the frost, what is the inference that you are making here, Jared Condon?
Well, I think that there's a let's call it market respect, Jimmy.
Right.
Market respect.
Okay. Market respect. There we go.
It must have been you finally logging in and being able to place a bet, and all of a sudden, look what's happened.
I think that might be it, because I have to put my hand up and say, when that text message came through with the tip from Jared, I was unable to shorten any horse from the events of yesterday at the cricket. So it certainly wasn't me on this occasion, but there is always market respect. Whenever Jared speaks and people follow, there is a definite respect for that money.
Well, we are trying to get three in a row, Jimmy. I just hope that you're not the one holding it back.
I tell you what, I'm going against you too, by the way. Before we get to that, speaking of yesterday's activities, Tristan, how was Movie World and Santa?
Movie World was a long, drawn-out affair. We had a long day at the cricket, and when the rain starts to come after tea, the beverages start to increase in both quality and quantity, really. So we revved up there, and then we went to Movie World for the White Christmas Spectacular. My kids were very excited, and I trundled through the door. I was battling to find my ticket on the phone, and I finally got in there. I timed my run perfectly. By the time I got there, the kids were lined up to see Santa, and it was about a 45-minute wait, and I'm in the queue. My three-year-old daughter, Charlotte, she was excited. She was pointing at Santa, and she was waving and all pumped to get the photo. And then we get to the front of the line, and the tears started flowing, and she wanted no part of it. And I felt exactly the same. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, it seems.
Very good. Hey, I'm going to the Villiers too for my racing tip. I'm going with the other Gerald Ryan, Steve Alessio runner. I'm going to go with Ellsberg. Last start winner, forgive the run at Rose Hill. I was more excited by Ellsberg. So, Jared, you know, maybe my phone reception might be working just after 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, hey?
Well, both $4.80 shots. I'm wondering if maybe there's a little lunch bet that should be had on the higher position on the two.
Absolutely. Count me in there.
Yeah, I'm in for that too, big time. So finishing position too, we're talking here, right? Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Jimmy's labelled it at 480, and I see it's just blown to 580. So you can see the market influence. Now, the other tip for you for the weekend, Jimmy, if you're cashed up out of Saturday, there is a race on Sunday called the Armadale Cup, race 7, number 8. There might be something to have a few bucks each way there. Little horse called La Tigressa. Hopefully she's going around there. Steps out the 1900. May well have been murdered in the last couple of runs, and might be a nice chance for a lazy Sunday cup.
nothing improves a horse like ownership, Jared, does it? So
that's entirely the truth.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Ellsberg's mine, head-to-head. Timmy Clark, make sure you ride it out, and away we go. We'll go the lunch bet on that one as well. My sports bet, Steve Smith, I'll take the $3 high bat for Australia in this, what's going to be, as you're listening, may well be unfolding. So appreciate that. Great to be back, boys. As I said, lawyers sifting through the remains of the last couple of podcasts. Haddon, of course, getting sent a couple of nasty letters there about... But as you quite rightly pointed out, Tristan, truth is a defence of defamation. So I've got to be wary of that. Great job, boys. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll look forward to doing it again.
All Thanks the best, gentlemen.
Reading the Play is Australia's favourite source of NRL and horse racing tips. Our professional analysts provide the sporting enthusiast with the best of the best. Get the best professional tips and previews from our tipsters direct to your phone. Readingtheplay.com.